This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 6th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 228. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. Stopping state-sponsored disinformation on Canadian TV. Telecoms turn off the Russia Today propaganda channel, but what about Chinese Communist Party channels? A human rights group wants CCTV4 and CGTN off Canadian airwaves. I speak with Laura Harth of Safeguard Defenders, and I welcome back sports economist Victor Matheson for his take on the U.S. women's soccer team lawsuit settlement and the Major League Baseball lockout. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or should Russia be thrown out of the International Olympic Committee for good? It's not even a case of fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me, because it keeps happening. Invasion of Georgia, 2008. Invasion of Crimea, 2014. Now invasion of Ukraine, 2022. Mad Vlad Putin has war in his Olympic playbook. Meanwhile, the IOC always touts its Olympic truce. If it's not mere virtue signaling, then get on with disciplining Russia once and for all. And I haven't even talked about Russia's doping cheats. South Africa was banned from 1964 to 1988 due to apartheid. Surely Russia deserves the same treatment for illegally invading Ukraine. As a side note, tip of the hat to the International Paralympic Committee for sending Team Russia and Team Belarus home from Beijing. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. It took a war for Canadian telecoms to drop a Russian government propaganda outlet from their channel menus. But the human rights group Safeguard Defenders is hoping that the federal broadcast regulator will end the authorization for two channels that act as Chinese Communist Party mouthpieces. Bell, Rogers, Shaw, and TELUS each voluntarily pulled the English-language RT America after Russia invaded Ukraine. On March 1st, Heritage Minister Pablo Rodriguez commended them and said that the Liberal government is asking the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission to fast-track a hearing that could ban Kremlin mouthpiece RT for good. Safeguard Defenders complained to Canada's broadcast regulator in December 2019, alleging license violations by CCTV4 and CGTN for airing forced false confessions of prisoners. The CRTC finally began its investigation in January. Joining me from Rome is Laura Harth from Safeguard Defenders, which advocates for journalists and lawyers in China.
What is your reaction to the removal of RT?
Hi, Bob. First of all, thank you so much for having me, for continuing to shine a light on this issue. Starting, well, you said it already, activists have been asking these things, not just for the Beijing Olympics, but for a very long time. And I think there's been a big parallel between what activists and political dissidents, pro-democracy activists have been asking, be it with regard to China or with regard to Russia, when we're talking about the individual Magnitsky sanctions, when we've been talking about propaganda, these channels. Indeed, I mean, there's a lot of parallels, and I think we're all obviously, well, happy is not the word, seeing what it had to take to have decision makers finally act and decide rapidly. I think we all owe a great debt to the Ukrainian people that have made this possible. Obviously, the President Zelensky in particular, who's become the face of this defiance against the brutal dictator. But obviously, what we have seen is it's been, let's say, really an earthquake in political decision making across the alliance of democracies in the world, obviously what we often call the West, but it's a lot larger than what the West used to be. And One of the interesting things, obviously, with regard to these developments, when it comes to the propaganda channels in Canada, it's been Russia Today. In Europe, they're also taking off the air Russia Today and Sputnik. Is that, again, this is something that activists have been warning for a very long time. I mean, many institutions, including Canada, parliaments, government institutions in Europe, in the US, have been warning for these disinformation campaigns. This disinformation, information warfare that has been going on for quite some time, but they have been very reluctant to actually act on those. Now, with regard to CGTN and CCTV, I think the question is even worse in a certain way, because we brought to the attention of CRTC, as we did with Ofcom in the UK, as we did with European regulators, as we did with US regulators, how they have been an integral part of grave human rights violations, broadcasting, airing forced confessions, which they helped produce together with the oppressive state machinery in China, including forced confessions, obviously obtained through torture and forced disappearances, arbitrary detention, including from foreigners, including from Canadian citizens. But regulators have been very, very reluctant and slow to act on these, I wouldn't even say allegations, because they are there's documented proof of each and every of these forced confessions. There's the testimonies of the victims that have denounced these practices to the regulators. But for many, many years, we haven't seen any action. Just to give you an idea, in 2019, we brought this first complaint to the CRTC, documenting at least 36 forced TV confessions with 70 victims, some of which were broadcast repeatedly on these channels, including in Canada. And so the fact that, you know, there has been a very slow uptake in responding to this is quite staggering, to be honest. Obviously, we know that in Canada, there was a particular sensitivity with the two Michaels being detained, arbitrarily detained, victims of enforced disappearances, of torture, of hostage diplomacy. And so there was some reticence, but at the same time, we are pretty sure as Safeguard Defenders that the fact that at that very time that they were detained, UK regulator Ofcom finally had decided to actually investigate these practices, and they subsequently sanctioned CGTN for it. They also took CGTN off the air because it's a party organ. We are pretty sure that it actually protected the two Michaels, at least from also having to go through this atrocities practice of a forced televised confession. So we repeat our call to regulators really to investigate this. And I'd say the new developments, the fact that in Europe, in Canada, on a side note, by the way, we obviously brought this all to the attention not only of the regulator, but also of the TV channels, the telecom operators that are broadcasting these channels. They have not been repeating either. They have not been investigating. Some others have, for example, in Australia. As soon as it was brought to the attention of the telecom operator there, it took them one day to take CGTN off the air and start an investigation. So that did not happen in Canada. Now, the recent development of wanting to target a channel because it's broadcasting propaganda, obviously in a horrible scenario of a war, but we all know what is going on in China. We know how these channels are being used for blatant propaganda. It's a very interesting development to see, especially in this time of information warfare, that might be a new, let's say, parameter for regulators, for telecom operators to take into account. And so we hope that the same will go with regard to China. We hope that the lesson we can learn from the atrocities happening now in Ukraine, that we will never know if it could have been avoided, but maybe if, you know, the words, the calls, incessant calls of activists, of dissidents, of democratic opponents had been heeded years ago, maybe this could have been avoided. So, you know, CGTN, CCTV, it's one small part of the puzzle, but it's a very integral part of what these regimes use, again, to spread disinformation, but also, you know, to enforce their image in the world. And we know that as an image of repression inside, but also growing transnational repression, and we need to put an end to it.
is it possible that in places where CCTV and CGTN are still being carried, that the Chinese services could become almost proxies for Russia? No more RT on the channel lineup, but CGTN and CCTV are still there, and they could be parroting what the Kremlin wants, which is what she might want.
Well, on the China-Russia relations, obviously I won't go too deep into that, but it's definitely going to be interesting to watch. One, I think the unified response of the West hopefully will make Xi think twice when it comes to Taiwan. I think we've given a very strong signal. I have the impression also that they're not too happy with how Putin is handling this crisis. But as you said, they have a strategic alliance and marriage of convenience, I would call it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. On CGTN, CCTV, I wouldn't say is there a risk that they become a proxy. They already are a proxy. The same words that Russia Today was censoring that are being censored in Russia regarding invasion, war, you know, do not use those, do not mention the war. It's already happening. And you said it, CGTN and CCTV are not going to use those words. We know that they are being censored heavily on social media channels within China. So it's not just a proxy. I mean, in terms of when it comes to this invasion, this war by one country, a nuclear power against another, a smaller country, they're already, you know, towing that line. So again, I think, you know, if this is the new gold standard of what democracies, of what telecom operators do not want to be broadcasting, do not want to be a part of, I think it goes to logic that CCTV and CGTN at least are being reviewed as a matter of urgency.
Thanks again for joining us on the Breaker.News podcast and the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast is Laura Harth with Safeguard Defenders joining us from Rome. And Laura, where can people find out more information about Safeguard Defenders?
So you can go to our website, which is safeguarddefenders.com. You can also find all the information just putting in the search bar CRTC, CCTV, CGTN for this specific issue. But there's also a lot of additional info both on human rights offenses within China, but also on the growing transnational oppression by China around the world, including our groundbreaking report on involuntary returns, which was released in January, and, you know, which you might have heard of already in Canada, where people are being kidnapped, harassed, threatened, their families threatened to make them return to China, a show of how they're attempting to spread their regime of political terror around the world. And unless we stop them, for now, they are managing quite well.
And a bonus treat this week, more from Professor Victor Matheson, sports economist at the College of the Holy Cross in Western Massachusetts. He was a guest last week on the Breaker.News podcast, and we've got even more from him this week. Members of the United States women's national soccer team are celebrating a major settlement in their equal rights lawsuit against the United States Soccer Federation, a $24 million deal to level the playing field for the team that hopes to win its third World Cup in a row next year.
They had to fight for it. They had to hire lawyers. They had to get into court. What is your reaction to this settlement for the U.S. women's soccer team?
Well, first of all, let me just say two things because before I forget. First of all, I'm a gigantic U.S. soccer fan, both on the men's and women's side. And let me congratulate Canada on their gold medal last summer in women's soccer because I don't know if they deserved that gold medal based on their performance in Tokyo, but certainly at some point over the career they've had. Again, with the great Christine Sinclair and obviously, Charmaine Hooper before and some of these other great players over time. Again, absolutely congratulations to them. And it's wonderful to have a great competitor to the north where we can have a real rivalry with, which is going to go into the men's side as well. I mean, it's also fantastic to see the great revitalization of that men's program. They're on top of the qualifying tables right now, and what's really nice here is in 2026 they're going to qualify automatically as one of the hosts, and it's really nice to have them actually qualify on their own terms in the year before, you know, in the year before they actually get that free bid in. That makes it much less seem like some sort of gift that they don't deserve, because, you know, the way they're playing right now, absolutely they deserve to be, you know, in that final group going here to, you know, going to Qatar, right? So that being said, let's talk about the women's piece here. This is a $24 million settlement, in part because the U.S. Awards money to players based on just general performance in games overall. So again, you know, if the U.S. and Canada have a friendly, although I don't know how friendly they are nowadays, but if the U.S. and Canada have a friendly, you know, you get paid for your participation in that. Of course, because that game is going to generate some TV revenue and some gate revenue, and that's shared with the players. And that happens on both the men's and the women's side. And then also you get money based on how well you perform in major tournaments, because FIFA hands over money to the confederations and to the individual soccer federations if the teams perform well. So, for example, if the United States wins the World Cup, FIFA is going to hand over a bunch of money to U.S. Soccer, and then you have to decide what to do with that money that's just been handed to you by FIFA. The problem is the amount of money they hand over for the Women's World Cup is a tiny fraction of the money they hand over for the Men's World Cup, which also means, which is because obviously they generate a lot more money from the Men's World Cup, both in terms of ticket sales directly as well as television revenue. And so the question is what you do. And at this point, U.S. Soccer has committed to saying that they will have identical contracts between the women and the men. But what that essentially is going to mean is that the men and the women have to agree to take equal amounts depending on how they do in the World Cup, which means that the men will have to agree that, yes, if we win the World Cup and get, you know, say $50, $100 million from FIFA, that we are going to just take a small amount of money from that. As a matter of fact, exactly the same amount of money that the women will take if they win the Women's World Cup, then FIFA hands the U.S. A tiny fraction of what they would hand over to the men. So this requires a huge buy-in from the men's program to basically agree that, you know, we are going to be willing to basically not take a large payout, even if we have a spectacular performance in the World Cup. The other important piece here is, in some ways, the women have said we want to be treated equally, but they also don't want to be treated equally. And one of the reasons they don't want to be treated equally is the women do not have a particularly viable women's program that provides large numbers of players with high salaries. So again, the NWSL is a fine league, and it's starting to generate, you know, real living wages for a good handful of players. But a bunch of, you know, women soccer players might say, hey, I need to guarantee money because I don't have a professional job that earns me a bunch of money otherwise. But that's not happening on the men's side, right? So, you know, our big star, you know, Christian Pulisic, he doesn't need to earn a bunch of money on the men's side as a guarantee, because he's making a huge amount of money at Chelsea, right? And of course, the same thing is happening with the top Canadian men's stars. And so what that means is, you know, the women may actually choose to sign a different sort of contract than the men that guarantees them a living wage, since they don't have outside options that are as good. And of course, that's exactly the sort of contract they originally did decide to sign. This doesn't mean that U.S. Soccer hasn't made some gigantic missteps. For example, again, this artificial turf thing was obviously forced upon them by FIFA, but we have seen the U.S. women playing in substandard conditions. They take coach instead of first class for years. They got lower per diems. You know, these are things that should never have happened, and these are things that that could have been corrected easily before it got to the case of a lawsuit. And, you know, I think those were kind of huge missteps on U.S. Soccer's part. That being said, you know, the big issue all stems from the fact that the Men's World Cup generates at least 10 times the revenue as the Women's World Cup. And so the question is, how do you pay both sides fairly? Does that mean equally, even the one side's generating a lot more money? Or does it mean that, look, FIFA's there to grow the game, and it doesn't matter who is earning the money. Throwing money at women's players is an important piece of making sure you grow both sides of the game. And I don't think there's an obvious answer there.
Meanwhile, labor strife in Major League Baseball has scuttled spring training and the start of the 2022 regular season.
Well, so I would say it's extremely unlikely that we won't see any baseball. The real worry from the owner's standpoint is not that whether people forgive Major League Baseball for going out on strike, but whether they just totally lose interest, right? I mean, sports is a little bit about being addicted. And we've had a couple of years here to kind of lose our addiction. We lost an entire season where no one actually went to the park. We had a very interrupted season last year. A season that doesn't happen at all this year is a good way to make sure an entire generation of fans says, you know what, I can enjoy my summer without paying, $15 for a beer at the ballpark, without paying $30 for parking, without paying $45 for a ticket. So that being said, I don't see this settling particularly soon. Remember, it's the owners that have locked out the players. It's not the other way around. This is totally on the owners at this point. And the owners have been threatening the players without actually coming to the table with any particular arguments about how they would like to negotiate here. So I am 100% on the players' side in this particular dispute. Because again, it's the owners, not wanting to commit any sort of fixed amounts of revenue to the players. In all of the other big sports in the United States, the unions and the unions and the players have agreed to split the revenues from the sport. And in most of the sports, it's about 50-50. In the NHL, again, roughly 50-50. NFL, roughly 50-50. And they're, you know, that means the players are guaranteed a certain amount of the total revenue. And basically they give the owners a lot of ability to do whatever they want to maximize the size of that pot of revenue, just as long as that revenue is being shared with the players. And Major League Baseball has nothing like this. And so what we've seen over the last 5 years or so is a handful of, you know, big money teams still wanting to play the game of throwing a lot of money at top players, but you've basically seen a large number of teams essentially drop out of the real market for bidding for players and deciding, you know, I just like to sell tickets, and if I win a bunch of games or not, it doesn't really matter to me. I'm going to save money on payroll and just collect any money I can and pocket that money. And I think what the players would like is some sort of revenue assurance, and that revenue assurance is, look, make all the money you can. You know, set up any way you want to set up with, you know, set up salary caps, set up maximum player salaries, you know, set up any of those third things. But let's just make sure that at the end of the day, the players as a whole are getting a fair share of the money that's coming in. And again, based on what we see at the other teams here in the other sports in North America, you know, splitting that pie roughly 50-50 is, but being assured of that split is probably something the players ultimately would agree to, but it's not something that the owners have seemed to have any interest in handing out.
That was Victor Matheson, one of the world's leading sports economists. He's with the College of the Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Hong Kong Free Press, what is Hong Kong's COVID-19 death toll? How officials were unable to give an accurate figure. Throughout much of February, official figures for Hong Kong's COVID-19 death toll remained in flux, with multiple agencies, several platforms, and backlogs contributing... 3, 2, 1. In Hong Kong Free Press, what is Hong Kong's COVID-19 death toll? How officials were unable to give an accurate figure. Throughout much of February, official figures for Hong Kong's COVID-19 death toll remained in flux, with multiple agencies, several platforms, and backlogs contributing to the confusion amid the Omicron crisis. as the number of Hong Kong's COVID-19 patients spirals beyond 55,000 and the death toll reaches some 200 a day, authorities have struggled to inform the public about just how many have perished due to the coronavirus over the past 2 years. In Kyoto news, a Kita governor who owns cat gifted from Putin blasts Ukraine invasion. The cat named Mir, which means peace in Russian, is very affectionate, unlike President Putin, Governor Norihisa Satake told reporters. Akita Prefecture gave Putin, who is known to have a fondness for dogs, an Akita dog in 2012 to express gratitude to Russia for its assistance following the 2011 earthquake and tsunami disaster in northeastern Japan. Satake, who is known for his love of cats, was gifted Mir in return. In Taiwan news, funding for Taiwanese speed skater frozen for 2 years over Beijing antics. Taiwan's Sports Administration announced that it will halt training and competition subsidies for Olympic speed skater Huang Yuting after her inappropriate remarks and actions during the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing. Huang first came under fire on February 3rd after she posted footage of herself training in a Chinese uniform. After Taiwanese netizens criticized her for the move, she defended her actions by stating that sports do not take nationality into account, and later further agitated Taiwanese by saying competing in Beijing felt like competing on her home field, among other controversial comments. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Seattle Times, Seattle area corporations, billionaires give $10 million to address homelessness downtown. Amazon, Starbucks, Microsoft Philanthropies, billionaires Steve and Connie Ballmer, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and a host of other corporations and philanthropists announced that they intend to spend more than $10 million in an effort to dramatically decrease homelessness downtown and in the Chinatown International District. Their investment will help set up and fund a team from the new King County Regional Homelessness Authority designed to triage and alleviate homeless camping from Belltown to Little Saigon. In the Salem Statesman Journal, Oregon Treasurer to dispose of $137 million in Russian assets. Oregon Treasurer Tobias Reed announced the divestment. Oregon has about $137 million in exposure to Russia. About $122 million of that is in bonds, currency, and public equity, while $15 million is in private markets. The Treasury manages overall assets of about $135 billion, so the amount associated with Russia is roughly 0.1%. In the Victoria Times columnist, nine BC public servants facing firing petition court to end vaccine mandate. At issue is a November 19th provincial government order that makes COVID-19 vaccination a condition of employment for all BC public service employees. Court documents say the vaccine policy fundamentally altered the employee's contract without proper notice or agreement or their consent in order to terminate them without any sort of due process or procedural fairness for just cause. The court filing says the vaccine mandate should be quashed. The mandate is expected to be in place until public health concerns regarding COVID are reduced to a level prescribed by government to enable workplaces to operate without COVID-related restrictions.
The biggest sports superstar in Cascadia, Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson, is coming to Vancouver on April 26th. Get in the huddle at the Independent Contractors and Businesses Association annual banquet. For information and tickets, go to icba.ca or call toll-free 1-800-663-2865.
And it don't matter what color you are.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
all the journalists who are putting their lives on the line to report on Russia's war against Ukraine, reporters in Ukraine and reporters in Russia. The first casualty of war is the truth, and these brave people are trying to fix that.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
bracie, siomi bracia, cosa scorrono.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 6th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 6th of March in 1967, during the Cold War, Joseph Stalin's daughter, Svetlana Aliyeva, defects to the United States? Now you know. Send me your feedback and send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.